Welcome, everyone, to this live episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio. I'm Tim Grady, and I'm here with Lou Weiss, who sponsors this show through All Metals and Forge Group. They can be found at steelforge.com for open die forgings and seamless rolled rings for industrial equipment manufacturers, the Defense Department, all heavy users of forgings. Check them out at steelforge.com. And Lou, joining us is Anthony Nieves, who is the committee chair for the services report on business from the Institute for Supply Management at ismworld.org. Anthony, again, thank you for being with us. I looked at the number when I got it, and I went, stratospheric.
It doesn't seem to stop, does it? We just keep setting new all-time highs.
Well, there's always 100 for the target. Yeah, these are great numbers. 69.1. Excellent. Good job. Another point to get your yellow jacket.
Well, as long as you guys keep giving me credit, I'll take it.
Yeah, good.
I see the respondents were all kind of chatting about supply chain issues and transportation difficulties, and nonetheless, you know, a great report, but they're really challenged.
No question. The supply chain disruption continues. It's the same old as it relates to not only the port congestion that's been ongoing. There has been some alleviation to that. It has alleviated just a bit, but still many in the queue, still a challenge offloading. Even with the longshoremen working multiple shifts, still lacking warehouse people, chassis are in demand, space, just having space for these containers, as well as the drivers to haul them away. You throw in some slow rail service and overland trucking issues, and that's why we still have what we have as far as the disruption to the supply chain. But putting that all aside, the numbers keep growing. One thing I'll point out, and we extrapolated this comment and put it into the report as well, is that our respondents are saying they're moving from the demand pull that we normally see in this sector of the just-in-time to just-in-case. So we're seeing an increase in order quantities as well as order frequency in an effort to try and offset the lengthened cycle time on deliveries.
I like that line, just in case. I think we'll have to talk to our steel salespeople here about using that expression. Maybe you need to up your order just in case.
You know what the next level is, right? Fly by the seat of your pants.
I've been doing that my whole life.
So, Anthony, what's driving this 69.1 number? What are the underlying facts?
Well, it's if you go back to what we saw in past months of the pent-up demand, the infusion of stimulus money, consumer confidence, things starting to reopen. Now, that was the base, the contributing foundation of this, right? But now with the supply chain disruption, as we've had this demand and we have this lag, it goes back to what I was just talking about with the increase of orders and frequency and quantities trying to meet that demand. You can look at the inventory index and see what the contraction is there for both inventory index and inventory sentiment. The respondents are telling us they can't replenish the inventories fast enough. And that's why we're seeing all 18 industries in this sector reflect growth relative to the composite index.
And new order activity is
on the charts. Well, we matched another all-time high, came in at the same reading, 69.7. And that's where that comment came from, was on the new orders index. One of the respondents said that we're just in case.
I like that. 2 months in a row, 69.7. I don't know if you get full yellow points for that, but we'll take it under advisement.
Well, I appreciate that. Anything helps.
Yeah, right. So I'm not seeing any other than, you know, the things we've already talked about, any other headwinds. There's some noise about inflation, transitory inflation, which appears here to stay. I don't know if that's being reflected in this report. Is there any pain that your respondents are expressing?
Well, we're seeing that demand pull inflation. If you look at the prices index at 82.3, at 82.3, it's down slightly from the prior month, 0.6 percentage points from the 82.9. But there's many contributing factors to that. It's not just, as you well know, on the manufacturing side, Lou, it's not just the raw material costs that we're seeing for steel, stainless, copper, even with lumber prices coming down still higher than they were year over year. So we have all that raw material upstream, but then we have wage pressure factoring in, as well as fuel costs. Look at the higher fuel costs that we've experienced. Petroleum-based products all going up in price. PVC, pipe and fittings, all that's up in price. We're seeing it across the board. As far as I'm, you know, not to be redundant, but with the wage pressure, especially in a labor-intensive industries that we see in the services sector, that's affecting price. Not saying it all gets passed on to the consumer, but it's there, and a good part of it is. So we're seeing that across the board. As you mentioned, Tim, with being transitory, you know, how long is that time of transitory? What's that period of time? What's the length of it? We don't know. Gives me a good opportunity to point out that because this also relates to, are we seeing this in profit margins? Are we seeing this in increased revenue? We'll know more about that on December 13th when we're back for the semi-annual, where we do measure those specifics like profit margin, labor and benefit costs, and looking at how prices look from not only 6 months forward, 6 months ahead, and year over year. That'll give us a nice, good picture of what's expected and what was in the past as well.
I'd like to mention to our audience that you gentlemen will be on the air December 13th, giving that report. So, you know, tune into that. It's a special report filled with all kinds of goody information. Hopefully it's all goody information. And so just check us out on the 13th and you'll see us live.
Anthony, you talk with a lot of different media properties throughout the day on this particular report, as does Tim Fiore when his report comes out. What's the toughest question you've been asked to answer so far?
Oh boy, we had a couple of really good questions, and one was the new variant, the Omicron. How would that potentially impact the supply chain going forward? Now, you know, we don't have the crystal ball here, but let's just say that Delta has not really derailed things, and some of the other variants that came out. It's going to be contingent upon many factors. Domestically here, it would be how much the contagion, where does it go? Do we have hospitalizations? Do the municipalities start locking things down again? So far, the governor had mentioned that in Los Angeles, they won't be shutting down at this juncture, even though there was a case reported recently. But the other thing that we have to realize is that over in Asia, every time there's a reported COVID case, they shut down sections of factories, if not the entire factory. And that will definitely impact the supply chain. So again, a lot of remains to be seen, but so far cases are minimal with this variant. We know it's overseas. We've had some reported cases here. It's not gone widespread yet. Hopefully it's contained, and that the vaccinations that have been happening, even though it may not ward off this variant in totality, lessen the chance of hospitalization and more severe action, such as ventilators and whatnot. So we'll have to see. But right now, again, I go back to what happened with the past variants. We didn't seem to have any derailing of anything from that.
And I'm glad you mentioned this particular issue, because I want to remind our audience that on Tuesday, next Tuesday, we're having the Hospital Purchasing Managers Index Report live with Nancy LeMaster. And that's very insightful on what's happening at the hospital, in the hospital theater, and in that industry sector to really get a handle on where this is at. you know, what you read in the news is one thing, but what the hospitals experience may be quite another. Lou?
That's true, true enough. And, you know, there are other circumstances. Just to refer back to what you were talking about before about China, is that China, when they shut down, you know, if there's one case of COVID in the neighborhood, they shut down a ring around two or three or four neighborhoods, and you're not allowed out of your house. Even to the point that, and I was shocked to hear this, even to the point that there are certain homes that are doors are being welded shut. So certainly not like in a democracy, but these things are actually happening, which we're not hearing about in mainstream media here. So there's a lot of bad things happening over there in China. And I think their PMI number was, I don't know if you know the number, I think it was 49 point something that they came out with at the beginning of the month. So that's not a good indicator either as to what's going on over there.
No, they're clearly having some challenges. Anthony?
No, that's a great point, and just speaks further to upstream in the supply chain. We know that going back 20, 30 years, how much was offshored to Asia, low-cost country sourcing. And now we see our respondents have definitely looked at, and we have some comments specifically in the commentary there about how they have evolved and looked to find innovative ways and workarounds to have that, to maintain that continuity of supply. We know that large companies have chartered their own container ships. They have chartered their own planes. They have looked at alternate sources of supply. We still are not there as far as having the level of product and quantities that we had pre-pandemic, but certainly we're nowhere in the dire straits that we were, nowhere near the dire straits that we were in the initial stages of the pandemic. Right now, we're seeing more things out of stock as an inconvenience versus so much of the true life necessities that we were experiencing early on.
Unless, of course, you're in the automotive industries, where there are no cars to sell and they still have no chips.
Yeah, that'll be tough for a while. What's interesting is you mentioned the supply chain, because the Institute for Supply Management is all about training people to be supply chain professionals. And New Balance, the company that makes sneakers, the manufacturer who feeds into retail, which is the section that you've got, Anthony, has got a domestic supply chain. They're producing as fast as they can. They're having a banner year because they're not impacted as seriously as people who are sourcing goods from overseas. What about what we call imports and exports on the manufacturing side is happening in the services side?
Well, we're definitely seeing increases there relative to when we look at last month, export orders, it has come down a bit, but still exemplifying a rate of growth. So we were at 62.3. It's down 4.4 percentage points to 57.9. And the imports came off slightly 2.8 percentage points to 50.5. Still in expansionary territory, but below the 53.3. We will continue to see some growth there up until the new year, as we see the Chinese New Year come in the first quarter, going into February of 2022. So I think we'll still see some increases going forward until that point in time.
Yeah, I would agree. February 1 through 15 is Chinese New Year, for those of you who are listening and wondering what those dates are. First 2 weeks of February, Lou?
It seems as though that we're seeing, from our perspective, that the first quarter is looking extremely promising. Not only in the manufacturing, but I'm going to throw it in your lap now about the service of the first quarter. Typically in manufacturing, first quarter tends to be somewhat on the slow side to get things going. You know, get more budget money in the pipeline and so on and so forth. But it's all indications are that January from a manufacturing side is going to be a whoopee month.
Well, we're getting that same feedback from our respondents on the services side. Again, we'll have a clearer picture of that when the semi-annual comes out. But right. To your point, usually after the first of the year, you get that wane post-holiday season in the services sector, as well as you mentioned, budgets being starting to get implemented, but usually they don't start hitting till about the second, third quarter. And then there's that rush at the end of the year. So it's always historically, but we've had an anomaly the past few years. So it's a bit different with these mitigating circumstances. And going forward, again, with the whole catch-up that we're experiencing initially, and we've mentioned this on the show in the past, our respondents said they thought that by the first quarter, second quarter of 2022, things would start to improve. We might see costs come down, you know, inflation level off, the supply chain catching up. Well, now they've pushed that back. You know, they're saying, no, maybe not be that point in time. It's probably going to be the latter part of 2022, maybe even possibly into 2023. Again, I'd like to see what our respondents tell us at the semi-annual.
Well, I think that something that we're experiencing, and you know, all the prices of goods have gone up over the last several months, that it's perhaps the prices aren't going to come down. You know, we see that the customer is willing to pay the full bore of a higher price. As long as one or two of the majors don't cut their prices and then create the competition thing, but everybody seems to be making money now.
Well, we talked about that in the past. Remember, it was over a year ago, we were saying that with the cost of stainless and aluminum and everything else, you know, a can of soda might cost 10 to 15 cents more per can. Right. And our comments were, hey, they're going to continue. If they want it and they have the money, they're going to buy it. Might complain a little bit, but they're still going to buy it. And that seems to be the case for sure right now.
I don't know. I don't hear many people complaining. I mean, we got $4.50 gas. Nobody's complaining.
Yeah, I get it. I complain inwardly when I fill up my car and I see that I'm paying a good 30% more than I was year over year. So I'm like, oh my gosh.
Well, if they get the ship that's in the Suez Canal straightened out and unclog the Suez Canal again, maybe prices won't go up so far. Because I think it's going to go up.
The other thing is, Lou, I mean, you're one of the few people that through the course of the pandemic still went to the office every day.
Absolutely.
Right. So, yeah, me, I was going in a few times a week, and then coupled with the lower gas prices, now I'm in every day with the higher gas prices. It's like, oh, boy, I'm getting
timing.
A double whammy. Yeah.
Good time.
Anthony, how's retail doing? They should be in pretty good shape, save, you know, trying to get inventory on the shelf. But what I'm hearing is that retail activity is pretty robust.
It is, but they were struggling trying to get enough product in there for the holidays, for sure. Some of the big players in the mix, they definitely were able to get the lion's share. They had the logistical capabilities to ensure they had product and for the holiday season. I was reading somewhere not too long ago that some of the smaller business operators were suffering and trying to piggyback off of some of the larger retail operators. But again, it seems like, you know, we should have a decent retail season here coming up. Again, with everyone, the consumer confidence where it is, I don't expect anything to be less than a year over year for the retail industry.
One of the things that concerns me is about the, in regards to import and export, is the cost of containers, if you can find one. Cost of a container a year and a half ago was a 40-foot trailer was about $4,000. It went up to $22,000. It's now down to $17,000, and everybody's happy. The price went down, but it's still 4.5 times higher than it was 18 months ago.
No question. And furthermore, they can't move them.
Right.
There's such a backup in the Port of Los Angeles and Long Beach that they just are trying to move them out as fast as they can.
But I'd like to share a little tidbit. You know, you talk about the two ports in California. There's a website called Marine traffic.com, and it shows the entire world with all the oceans and all of that, with green and red dots throughout the entire world. 100,000 ships are out in the ocean at any given time. So when we hear how terrible LA and Long Beach is, yeah, it's bad. You know, and we're expecting a strike out there perhaps, but take a look at the Suez Canal. You can't see any water. It's all boats, one of which is stuck. So we still have this this logistical problem that I don't think is going to go away anytime soon, which will also help to keep the inflationary prices up and delay shipments.
Anthony, forestry is a big sector within your report. And I know that there were import tariffs on lumber coming from Canada. How is forestry doing as a sector? Strong? Are they catching up? Are they still behind the curve in terms of feeding supply or in feeding demand?
Well, when you look at that particular industry, and again, all 18 reflected growth. So they're fine. They're in expansionary territory. But specifically to lumber, everyone's saying how lumber prices have come down a bit. Yes, they have. As I pointed out earlier, still higher than they were year over year. So everyone's saying, okay, we're not getting the increases. It's softened in price, but it's still high cost for lumber right now. And there's still material shortages, especially in the construction trade, as it relates to not just the lumber, but many of the other components. And not to go off on a tangent, but it's all interrelated, that we're seeing a shortage in the PVC I mentioned earlier. Appliances are still a challenge. Many homes are being finished, but they don't even have the appliances to turnkey them yet. So it's just this disruption in the supply chain has affected so many of the industries across the board on both sides of both sectors, manufacturing and services.
I'll tell you to what level the wood shortages have come down to. We are an ISO registered company and have been for 25 years. And every 3 years we go through our renewal audit. And every 3 years we get a new plaque to put on the wall from the registrar. It's usually wood with metal and so on and so forth. We didn't get ours in July. So a phone call was made yesterday. Where's our new plaque? We have a wood shortage.
Oh, boy.
So it's down to that level. They don't have a piece of 8x12x2 inch thick wood to make ISO plaques. But I thought it was worth the humorous side of that.
Anthony, one of the sectors that you look at is mining. And currently this administration is trying to move fossil fuels out of the picture and bring in electric. How is mining doing under the pressure of this administration trying to reduce coal use?
Well, that's a great question, Tim. I mean, we don't measure that detailed as other than whether they exemplify growth and seeing what the comments that come in from the respondents, but let's look at it from a reality standpoint. As putting aside, everyone wants to be environmentally conscious, right, and responsible. But the thing is, how fast are we going to phase out? Even with moratoriums put in place, be hard-pressed to transition from fossil fuels in any time frame that some are projecting it to be. So I think that we're still going to be reliant on it. I know that the manufacturers, as we see every day, are looking at alternate methods, whether it be utilizing electric or hydrogen or whatever the case might be. But I think we're still going to see the use of fossil fuels for quite some time. It's not going to wane overnight. So the industry is still going strong as we speak.
Yeah, I would agree. Take off a big wind turbine to turn a turbine that's currently steam and coal fired fast enough to generate enough power to replace that steam and coal fired generator. So we'll have to see how that goes. In the overall, Anthony, it sounds, Terrific. Lou and I are looking at this cloud at the silver lining, and we're trying to find out, is this sucker going to rain on us, surprisingly? Nothing indicates it's going to.
Yeah, I think about it all the time as far as every time we set a new all-time high, I'm thinking, when are we going to level off? When are we going to start some pullback here? And I think because we haven't caught up yet, we're going to continue to see this growth. May not be at this high level that we're seeing right now, but it's still going to be strong growth going forward until we finally catch up. And I think that's going to be months down the road, not days. So as far as this economy overheating, I don't think we're there yet. I think the supply chain disruption is almost like its own spigot or faucet for that, and kind of managing that we're not going such gangbusters that we hit that business cycle where we fall off the edge of the cliff, so to speak. So I think we're in good shape right now. I feel our respondents from what they're telling us that they think, as Lou mentioned earlier, not only the first quarter, but even beyond, things look positive going forward for the sector.
One quick question, and I'll flip it over to Lou. Are we at pre-pandemic levels, above or below at this point in time?
In some areas, we've exemplified some growth. We've exhibited some growth, but we're not there yet. Okay, we've had some business closures. We have to keep that in mind. You know, the capacity constraints are in place. So we're not quite there. But even though when you look at how strong the economy is right now and the consumer confidence, it does seem that way. But there's also others that have not benefited as much from the what we're seeing on this growth as we're somewhat coming out of the pandemic. We're not done with it yet. So time will tell where we wind up.
I think that, and we didn't talk about it during this show, but I think that part of the problem that exists in terms of logistics and import and export and all so on is that we still have employee shortages and skill shortages. And no one really talks about what that can convert to in a number, how it's affecting our economy. I have not seen it. I don't know if you have any comments on that, Anthony, but it certainly plays a role. The question is, to what degree and how much?
No question. And it's kind of a bit of a dichotomy when you look at it, in the sense that we know that companies are hurting as far as labor resources. People are moving out of certain professions into others because of the high demand for workers, especially on the skilled side. But even on some of the less skilled positions, whether it be in food service and accommodations, tedious hard work, there's other industries that need workers, and they're transitioning out of that. And it's tough to backfill. But then yet, you look at the jobs report today, it was below estimates. And then you find out that there's many people that still have not entered the workforce from the pandemic. And part of it is due to they don't find the jobs that's suitable to their needs or their skill set. So that's what I mean by we have some conflicting things going on there. But overall, there is a labor shortage, as you pointed out, and it has affected capacity.
And my personal belief, and I know we're getting to a point of wrapping up shortly, my personal belief is that the people in the know and people who are in power to make things right need to set up, perhaps government funded, but there goes that democratic left side, programs to educate and train and so on, not only American citizens, but perhaps those who are coming into our country, as long as they've been tested, to be able to start filling the holes in our manufacturing and services area. Because I think the number, Tim, and correct me if I'm wrong, we're somewhere short of 1.5 million people for jobs right now. And it's claimed by organizations like NAM, and I don't know what number you come up with, Anthony, but it's going to be somewhere around 2.5, 3, 3.5 million in 2 years from now. Yeah. So that situation, unless treated, you know, a boil not treated hurts for a long time.
No question. I read something as recent as this morning that said we were closer to 2 million jobs that were needed. So further speaks to what you're talking about.
Well, you bring up an interesting point, Lou, about has the labor shortage and these other supply chain issues impacted, for instance, GDP? We always look at U.S. GDP. We were a $20 trillion or a $21 trillion economy. And it's interesting you bring that up. I have not seen over the 2019, 2020, and now 2021 timeframe that number tail off. It's in growth. It's around 6% growth just for this year. So it's interesting that we don't see that impact, but we'll have to watch that. Anthony?
Well, I think I was waiting for your question, Tim, on, you know, what does this represent on an annualized basis from based on our composite index? I was like, wait, Tim hasn't gone there yet.
Good question.
6.9%. When you look at the composite index on an annualized basis, it transposes into a 6.9% GDP growth.
We've never done that. That's somebody saying we're going to pay off the national debt. That's never going to be paid off.
Well, Anthony, we appreciate you joining us. We know you've got to run to talk to some other media people, and we really appreciate working with the Institute for Supply Management. You can find this report at ismworld.org. And thanks for joining us, Anthony.
Thank you, gentlemen. Have a great day.
We'll see you on the 13th.
Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
Okay.
Take care.
While you folks are out there surfing the web, please go to jacketmediaco.com where you can find this show and all of the other podcasts that are produced by Jacket Media Co. And thank you always for listening to this episode of Manufacturing Talk Radio.
Farewell.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.